I call this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. This is Wednesday, January 10th. This is our second meeting of the calendar year. And we do have a quorum present. All three commissioners are here. Next item on our agenda would be the adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before the board before. And if anyone wishes to comment on an item, they may do so now. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd move for approval of the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Next item on our agenda is reports, and we have the results of the Oregon Healthy Teens Survey. I believe we have some presenters in the audience. Come forward, ladies, and
thank you.
Introduce yourselves for the record.
Good morning.
Share the good news.
Yeah. So I'm Nicole Fields. I'm the Health Promotion Program Manager for Public Health.
Good morning. My name is Jess Palma. I am a Health Education Specialist in Public Health.
Thanks for having us this morning.
Welcome.
Yeah, I think Jess is going to kick us off.
So we are very excited to present this data. We use the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey, and I will tell you what it is in just a moment. But this provides a lot of good information for us at a local level, but it also provides a lot of important information at the state level. So, you know, think trends that we're seeing in our youth, substance use trends, mental health trends, different things like adverse childhood experiences. So this is all information that really drives our programs. It helps us figure out what's working, what needs to be improved, you know, what are things that we've missed, or what are things that are going really, really well. So this survey is done on odd years. So, for example, 2013, 2015, 2017, and it is a voluntary survey that's completely anonymous. And for the past several years, we've had all of Lincoln County schools participate in the survey. And then, you know, as I had mentioned, this provides us with a lot of really important information that helps us shape our programs and our outreach.
So before you continue, how mm-hmm. do you participate in the survey? Is it a handout piece of papers in classrooms? Is it online? All of the above?
So what I know to be true is that the surveys... Oh, it is all of the above.
It is all of the above. It's up to the school's administrator to choose which is easier for his school population.
Is there... preponderance of one way or another?
I think it's pretty even. It's just up to the school teacher. I think a lot of it depends on the format of their health classes as well. I've heard that this gets administered a lot of the time in the health classes, and if their health class is an online format, then that might be easier. If their health is a classroom-based, then it's easier to do the paper.
Okay.
And what's really important is that regardless of the format that they choose, the questions are the same.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Great. So we'll kick it off with just general health. And this is basically asking the kiddos in 8th and 11th grade how they feel their general health is. This is one of those statistics that we call a golf score statistic, so lower is better. So right now, 17.6% of our 8th graders rate their health as fair or poor, and 14.9% of the 11th graders rate their health as fair or poor. To give you an idea of the comparison, the 8th graders are doing slightly better. They dropped almost a percentage from 2015, and the 11th graders are doing quite a bit better. They dropped 10% from 2015. And we're pretty comparable to the state for the 11th graders. For the 8th graders, we're slightly worse than the state. They're at 13.8 and we're at 17.6.
So taking a moment to look at emotional health, this is again one of those golf scores, right? We want to see really low numbers here. 32.3%, which comes out to be almost 1 in 3 of our 8th graders, are rating their emotional health as fair or poor. And then similarly, you know, just over 1 in 3 of our 11th graders are also rating their emotional health as fair or poor. And when you compare this to the state, we're slightly better in our 8th... Oh, I'm sorry. In 2015, we were slightly better. And, you know, now in 2017... we've had more students reporting that fair or poor health. And then compared to the state this year, we are about 4% higher with that rating for 8th graders, and we're also higher with our 11th graders by 2%.
All right, so we're going to be talking about marijuana use for a couple slides here, and I know that that's a hot topic lately. So 5.9 of our eighth graders have used marijuana in the last 30 days, and that jumps immensely when you look at our 11th graders, because 20%, which is 1 in 5 of our 11th graders, have used marijuana in the last 30 days. We just listed some of the serious impacts it has on our kiddos, and this is why it's really, really important that our kids are not starting marijuana use until their legal age, because the brain isn't finished developing until they're 26. So even if they start at 21, which is when it's legal, there's still going to be some impacts on their developing brain. Question?
Thompson, how does that compare to 2 years ago before we passed the marijuana legislation?
Sure. So slides about the past years we have coming, we have some comparison slides that are really, really, they'll show you all the trends that we have. I can kind of spoiler alert it for you if you'd like, but I think that comparative drug use of marijuana among our 8th graders has gone down since legalization, and then our 11th graders, it's gone kind of up and down. We saw it dip a little bit in 2016, and then it came back up in 2017, but it stayed around the 20% range for our 11th graders. It hasn't changed a ton from that 1 in 5 statistic.
So now, this is their own evaluation.
Yeah.
It's not by actually taking a blood test on kids.
Definitely not. Correct. Yeah, this is all self-reported. Okay. And there's actually, funny enough, there's a question in the survey that's like, how honest were you in this survey? And I think it was about 95% of the kids said that they were very honest, and I think the other 5 said that they were somewhat honest or pretty honest. So I think that we're getting, you know, a fairly good read on these kids. Self-reporting is always one of those things where it can be tricky, but we're not going to herd the kids out and draw their blood. And we want them to tell us the truth, you know, and I think doing it as an anonymous survey kind of encourages them to tell us the truth without having, like, looming consequences if they do admit something, doing something illegal.
So, I may have missed this, but an 11th grader is roughly, what, 15, 16?
16, 17, 16, yeah.
17?
Yep.
And an 8th grader would be,
I think that's
less 40. Than that.
Yeah, 13, 14.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So, statewide marijuana use is pretty similar to Lincoln County. The state is actually just slightly higher in the 8th graders and really comparable in the 11th graders, just to give you an idea on the trend on that one.
So continuing with marijuana use amongst our youth, only 50.2% of our 11th graders haven't tried marijuana. And this is much higher than our 8th graders, which 87.9% haven't tried marijuana. And the graph below shows past use within the 30 days. And what's really important to note here is that the marijuana use in the last 30 days is about four times higher in 11th grade than in 8th grade. And, you know, what you'll also notice is tobacco use is a little higher, but we don't see that significant jump. You know, we see an increase about 2% from tobacco use in 8th grade to 11th grade.
So is it too early in the survey process to determine how much the legalization of marijuana has had an effect on these figures?
I would tend to say yes on that. We like to try and wait about 5 years to assess trends. We definitely did see a little bit of a jump, and they have some really interesting questions on there now about like where kiddos are seeing marijuana presented. Like, are they seeing it in print? Are they seeing it on television? Are they seeing billboards? And they even have one on there about, like, are they seeing people spinning signs or standing outside with signs, which we might have all seen driving down 101. So I think that that's kind of an interesting new set of questions that they're starting to ask now since legalization.
So I guess the question that I'd ask is also the kids that drive.
Yeah.
Because as they become more independent, it gives them more opportunity to do things in private. And kids who don't drive are usually more confined to home. It seems like a very simple question is, do you drive yet?
Yep.
And then see how that correlates to the number that...
And I actually do have data on that.
You do?
I do, yes. So when they asked, they only asked the 11th graders that, because obviously, hopefully, right. our 8th graders are not driving cars. But it was about a 50-50 split, whether they drive or not. So of the kiddos that do drive, about 1 in 4 who use marijuana drive within the 3 hours that it would still be in their body.
Okay. And then the kids that don't drive, I was looking more at this statistic of marijuana use.
Mm-hmm. So this is all the kids. This is whether they drive or not. The statistic I just mentioned is of the kids who drive and use marijuana, 1 in 4 would drive within the 3 hours.
I was curious about the kids that don't drive, if that rate is much different.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They didn't ask that question for the kiddos that...
Seemed like a logical question to ask. If you're going to ask one side, you should ask the other just to make sure you have a confirmation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they kind of looked at the combined rates for that portion, and they're less worried about knowing... Well, I guess, you know, you're right on that. I think that would be an interesting statistic to have just to see if they were taking advantage, like, all right, I'm not driving, so...
I'm not... is free and able to move away from, you know, the parents and stuff. Mobility is higher. Mobility may give these kids extra opportunity. Not saying we should mm-hmm. change anything, but it'd be an interesting system.
Yeah, and that's a good possible reasoning for the 8th to 11th grade shift, too, is maybe now the 11th graders are quite a bit more mobile. They have access to transportation that the 8th graders might not have. They have older friends that might be able to get them the marijuana.
The other statistic I'd like to see is voluntarily, do you participate in sports?
Mm-hmm.
If a kid's participating in sports, well, and it can include other activities too, but particularly sports, does that change that number?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes. You may have a way to improve the number by allowing more opportunity to sports.
Mm-hmm.
Could be sports, could be art, music.
Academics, yeah.
But you should break it so that...
Be interesting.
Mm-hmm, and that's interesting.
Other activities, and then you may have a tool then to actually make a change.
Well, it brings up that resilience factor, too, mm-hmm. that we know from adverse childhood experience research tells us that kiddos that have, like, one resilient, good example of an adult in their life and are, you know, have those resiliency factors, like they're involved in things and they have a support system, mm-hmm. are more likely to be successful all around, less likely to go to a prison system, less likely to do drugs, be addicted to alcohol. All of those things are kind of lumped in with those protective factors.
Okay. You just used a term that bothered me.
Yes.
Kiddos. Kiddos means to me that somebody that's very young,
mm-hmm.
And these kids are almost adults.
Yeah.
In the upper group, isn't it inappropriate to use the word kiddos?
I will switch to...
No, I mean, I don't want... I just wondered if I was... I'm so old, I wouldn't know anymore.
I use it more as like a colloquialism just because, you know, we present to all sorts of different people in the community. And I feel like adolescents can sometimes be chunky, so.
Okay, honestly, you do what you feel comfortable with. But I thought maybe I'd grown out of it.
I will, I'll note it and make the switch.
If it's
for
effective to communicate with the youth, I think that's the question or the concern. Go ahead.
This is yours, right?
Nope.
Oh, I have marijuana.
Oh, okay. It is.
That's okay.
No, so Lincoln County tobacco use. We've actually seen some really good trends on this one. We have only 3.6 of our 8th graders smoking cigarettes within the last 30 days, and then 5.7% of 11th graders have smoked cigarettes in the last 30 days. E-cigarette and vaping use has gone up. We've seen higher numbers in both the 8th and 11th graders for using vaping than cigarettes. Compared to our statewide trends, we're about right on with the statewide trends on both. Statewide is actually a little bit higher in tobacco use for the 11th graders. Kind of a little note on Tobacco 21, which recently passed, that nearly 40% of 8th graders and 50% of 11th graders were getting tobacco from 18-plus friends. So they're friends that were a little bit older than them. So this is one area where we might be able to see some really good movements with that new legislation.
So again, we're looking at that 30-day use, but this time amongst alcohol. With our 8th graders, we are a little bit above the state use for our 8th graders at 11.6%. But then in 11th grade, we see that we're just slightly below. We're about 1% lower than state use in 11th grade. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up, you know, when we were talking about driving, is oftentimes when we're working with our youth in Lincoln County, we often hear the argument, well, would you rather I drive drunk or would you rather I drive high? You know, and of course the answer is, well, neither. Neither is a safe choice. We don't want anyone to ever, you know, regardless of their age, we never want someone to drive drunk or high or impaired. You know, if they're very sleepy, that's dangerous, right? And this will go back into that perception of harm, too, which it affects our rates of use, and I'll mention that in just a couple more slides. But I just thought that was interesting. You know, there's this thought that alcohol is more dangerous than marijuana, and so that impacts their rates. And that could be why, you know, we're seeing it slightly less in 11th graders compared to the statewide data. Approximately 25% of both groups reported using alcohol at ages 14 years or younger. And what we know is the sooner that you start using a substance, the more likely you are to develop problems with the substance later on in life.
So I'll ask you a policy question, and I see that the providers to the answer may be in the back of the room, but how does public health feel about the statement that marijuana is less dangerous than alcohol?
This is a statement that we are very familiar with hearing, and unfortunately, you know, we don't have as much research on marijuana. You know, a few slides ago, Nicole had mentioned issues that we know occur when people are using, you know, memory loss. It inhibits the ability to learn as effectively. There's a lot of other side effects that are happening, but we haven't been able to study it the same as we have other substances.
Mm-hmm. And you think about, I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago when people thought it was safe to drink alcohol when pregnant or to drink and drive cars. And it's just, it takes a long time to get that, like, lifetime view of data. So, mm-hmm. I mean, while we might have some trends about marijuana legalization in the next 5 to 10 years, those lifetime effects of people using marijuana are going to be a lot further down the line, unfortunately for us, but...
I think one other issue that we run into is marijuana today is so much stronger than it was in the past. You know, we'll often hear from parents or grandparents, well, I smoked all the time, and look, I'm fine, I'm successful, you know. First off, of course, everyone is different, right? Substances affect people differently. You know someone's grandma that smoked for years and years and years, and she didn't get lung cancer. Is that the norm? No. You know, we know that smoking is harmless, but some people react differently to it. But, you know, missing that big flashing sign that says, you know, marijuana, the THC, the component that is getting people high, is so much stronger in the products and in the marijuana that's on the market than was, you know, even 20 years ago.
Do we have a percentage of what that increase might be?
It's very significant. Jennifer.
Very significant, doesn't it?
Come on forward,
so,
Jennifer.
So back in the 70s or the day of Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, we're looking at a THC rate of 1% to 3%. That's when it used to be called Mexican ditch weed because it grew wild in the ditches, right? And so now we're seeing THC levels of upwards to 97% depending on what product it is. In the grown flower... THC in the grown plant, we're looking at numbers. I think the highest that I have seen was 68% in just the flower that people are smoking. But where we're concerned is that our kids are showing an increased level of what's called dabbing, which is a new form of ingesting marijuana, and the THC levels are close to 100% when you're dabbing. And the kids, you know, laugh about it because they lose total control of their bodies. You know, you've seen football stars doing that dabbing dance at the, you know, at the end zone or whatever it is. The reason for that is because you do lose total control of your body. It's so much THC hitting all at once. And so the products that we have on the market now are a lot more dangerous than what we had back in the 70s. And when you were asking for long-term research, I can tell you that back in the 70s, they did they followed this group of kids in New Zealand. It was my age group, so I was really interested in these kids. And because they were, what's that called? The health
where everybody has the same health care.
Universal.
Universal health care. They were able to get this data, and they followed these kids from infancy to adulthood. And kids that started marijuana use before the age of 14 had a three-point decline in IQ rates, which doesn't sound like a lot. But when it comes down to determining whether or not you're low-functioning or mentally retarded, you're looking at a 1% difference. So just that label right there could change their whole trajectory into adulthood.
So let me clarify. You said, and I used the word clarify, sorry.
It's okay.
It might steal your word.
You're learning.
You said 3.1% or 3% or 0.3%?
3 points. Decline in IQ. Is that...
So, 3%?
No, like an IQ of 120 versus an IQ of 117.
Okay, I see what you're talking about. I'm going to make sure where we're at.
Yeah, yeah.
Big difference.
And the other question I wanted to just touch on really quickly is you asked about driving and kids and whether or not that changes. Recently for my other grant, that's why I'm not talking to you today, this is now being passed on to Jess, and I'm taking a new route, but we did some focus groups with youth in our communities, and one of the questions that what my coalitions are always asking is, where are these kids' parties going? Remember when we used to have big bonfires and we'd go out and get all these kids off Table Mountain, you know, off the beach? They're not doing that anymore because of social media. They can't be on the beach and still have a Wi-Fi connection. So they told us that now these parties
that's
have grown...
That's why I go to the beach, because there is no Wi-Fi connection.
...have grown more intimate, and they're doing these in homes now, and it's not necessarily the big bonfires that we're used to, and it's all technology. And so the driving aspect might actually look a little different because of that as well.
Interesting. So I have one other thought just to add to the research aspect. Federal law has prohibited dollars for research on marijuana. So, again, the data as to the consequences of use really hasn't had time to be determined, whereas there have been many years of research into alcohol and tobacco and the impacts of use of those products. So,
yeah, that's an excellent point.
We'll turn the podium back to you guys.
And, sorry, one more interesting note on that study that Jennifer mentioned was they also found that youth that started using marijuana before the age of 18, if they would have normally developed schizophrenia, right, because sometimes it can be passed down in families, they developed it 3 years earlier than the peers that were not using marijuana. Does that make sense? So if they were already going to develop it, their symptoms were onset 3 years sooner than if they hadn't been using.
All right, so prescription drug use. We've got about 5% of our 8th graders using a prescription drug without a prescription in the last 30 days, and 5.5% of our 11th graders. Kind of interesting that this is a really similar percentage, and it really, to me, speaks to where they're getting them from, because this isn't one where they have to get them from an older friend or a peer. These are things that are likely already in their house, or prescribed to them that they're misusing, or prescribed to their friends that they're misusing. About 30% of both groups reported it would be very easy or sort of easy to get prescription drugs not prescribed to them. So that just kind of shows that we need a lot of community education on safe medication disposal, locking up your medication, and that sharing component between peer groups.
So this is looking at comparing all of the drugs that were surveyed that were covered in the survey amongst 8th graders. And what really stands out here is that alcohol and marijuana are consistently higher than tobacco or prescription drug use. And, you know, we're seeing a consistent decline in tobacco use. And you think, how many commercials have you seen just in the last week about tobacco use, you know, and this is the generation that's going to stomp out tobacco use, right? You hear that all the time. But how many alcohol ads have you seen on TV? And how many marijuana billboards or sandwich boards have you seen just driving to work, right? So there's a different climate around these substances. And then this also relates, I keep telling you, perception of harm. It's coming up, I promise. But we know that when that is lower, we see a higher use in these substances.
And I think it's interesting, if you can go back and forth one more time on those, because this is 8th grade to 11th grade, so you can really see the jump from the 8th graders to the 11th graders. I think, it's interesting to see those much higher numbers. I'm not going to go through them all because we've kind of done that in the past slides. But for comparative use, alcohol and marijuana are clearly our highest here. It's the same scale as the 11th graders, so you can see that jump in use for both those two substances, where we were staying about the same around tobacco and prescription drugs. And like I had mentioned earlier with the legalization, we didn't see too much of a fluctuation on the marijuana in the 11th graders. It kind of dipped for, or went up for a year, dipped down a little bit for a year, came back up for a year. So we haven't seen too much movement on that one.
I ask you a question. We break this down on marijuana, but there's another component of drugs that has been fashionable in the past, meth, cocaine, and heroin. Do we have any feel for those drugs? Because we lump that. That's only marijuana numbers, if I understand.
Yeah.
What about this other group that is much more impacting if they get into it? Is it declining or is it increasing?
I don't believe they asked for the survey, for the specific illegal drugs. It's a statewide survey, so I couldn't say exactly why they decided not to. I think that they probably tried to get around questions where they had, you know, those specific funding streams. They had felt like they were probably going to get more impactful data just because the numbers would be a lot smaller, but I think it's something that could come in the future.
And they are working on redoing this survey to be more comprehensive. So there's another survey that's done in even years that is the student wellness survey. And so what they are working on is creating one survey that would be done each year. And so they're looking at different questions that they could include or exclude. So we're hopeful that that would be included. Okay, so here it is. You've been anxiously awaiting. What is this perception of harm that I keep mentioning? What we know is that when perception of harm is low, we see substance use increase. And so to put it more simply, if you are thinking an activity, a substance, something is not very likely to be risky or not very likely to have negative consequences or results, right, that would be a low perception of harm. And so what really stands out here is that if you will remember back to, maybe I will even give it to you. So in our comparative drug use, right, we see that alcohol and marijuana were very high in use. And then when we come to perception of harm, we see that the perception of harm, right, so that knowledge of the dangers are very low. So we know that those two things are connected.
All right, so for our 11th graders, we even see the perception of harm on marijuana go down even further. Like Jess mentioned, when perception of harm goes down, use goes up of these substances. One interesting statistic that I saw while looking through the report for the perception of harm, too, is that almost 80% of 11th graders, their friends, think that to use tobacco is bad. But only 32% of people think, or of the 11th graders, think that their friends would think using marijuana is bad. So it's really that social norm that they think their friends are going to judge them for using tobacco, but not for using marijuana.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, since I just went through this mentally, sorry, Commissioner Thompson. the higher the number, the more perception of harm, therefore you would think it's more of a, therefore it would be more of a deterrent to you. So as you look to 2017, the perception of harm has dropped dramatically, therefore... Low is bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Like my golf score. High is bad in my golf
score.
Or high is good in my golf score. Anyhow, go ahead.
So looking at suicide ideation in 8th grade, you'll see that we are consistently higher than the state data. And what's interesting to me is if we think back to the first couple slides, you know, when students were rating general health, but then also their emotional health, right? We had about 1 in 3 8th graders and about 1 in 3 11th graders rating their mental health or their emotional health as poor or fair, you know, and so we see that connection too. Through suicide ideation.
All right, and then just to wrap up, this is the 11th grade data, where we actually see quite a positive trend that we're trending downwards a little bit. So there's less of our adolescents in 11th grade having that suicide ideation. And we're, again, pretty similar to the state on this data. We're a little bit higher in 2017 and actually had a little bit of a jump in 2017. So just kind of something to keep in mind.
On this number here, this mm-hmm. is the one that I think that we can make a difference. I think we have in this community definitely put some effort into it through school-based healthcare clinics and mm-hmm. things like that. But that's still, I mean,
it's high.
Mm-hmm. Look at that number. You just, and I've seen it mm-hmm. in the class that I was in school. And mm-hmm. we've got to change that number, right?
One in five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, even if we look back at the emotional health slide, it's nearly, you know, 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 of these 8th graders and 11th graders are rating their emotional health as fair or poor. And I think that that one directly correlates with this here. That's what we're seeing is these adolescents that are really, really struggling emotionally, and this is what it leads to. I mean, it's terrible to see, but I think that going back to what you said, I mean, I'm hopeful that we could impact any of these measures. You know, these are things that we're kind of directly working on in public health and throughout Health and Human Services. So I'm hopeful that with, you know, the grants that we get and the support that we get from y'all and the community, that these are things that we can all kind of get moving in the right direction.
I think another really important part, you know, and thank you for having us today, is of course we use this data and it affects how we plan things, but what's really empowering is being able to share it with our decision makers and being able to share the knowledge with our community. Because if our whole community and the people in power know what's going on and know what the trends are, we can come together and we can work on these issues.
So is this information presented to groups outside of I guess the Board of Commissioners? I mean, who
yeah, we just access? Got the 2017 data, and so we're going to begin presenting it out to certain groups. We have to be careful with releasing some of it because the full report has individual school data, and we can't release that because some of the schools are so small they mm-hmm. feel like it could be identifying. So we kind of have to put it in presentations like this and get those out to the community.
And it has been presented to our community coalition, PADA, Partnership Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse.
Present this data to kids, that's where the change has got to be made.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point.
You don't present it.
We do share it with kids. We have 4 youth leadership trainings throughout the county each year. It brings high school kids from
come back up here. I want to talk.
Yes, we do. We incorporate this information in all of the presentations that we do with youth. We do 4 youth leadership trainings through PADA, where we bring high school kids from all of the high schools throughout Lincoln County to a centralized venue, and we pay for substitutes to go in and teach the classes so that we can have teacher support.
High school kids, are we talking a small group of kids, or are we talking general population?
So for these leadership trainings, we have about 60 kids each time, and it's 60 different kids at each individual training. So I think that we're pretty consistent in hitting more than, these aren't just, we call it Leadership Academy, but these are not the cream of the crop leadership kids. These kids come from the continuum. We also include kids from Angel Job Corps because our focus is up to age 21.
Okay, these kind of groups are usually the selected kids that haven't got the problems. It seems like to me these kinds of information, Peter, should be the general public, because if you're going to make a change, sometimes kids, if they see the numbers that they set up.
Mm-hmm. And these go to the school districts too, so we can't say,
but that
isn't like
getting in the kids' hands.
Yeah, but we're not sure exactly what they do with them, so that could be something that they're presenting to the kids as well.
Well, there's a great test for you.
Yeah.
Take a school, present them the data, and see if they can make the difference. Because I don't care how you are, commissioners, we get a choice, but it's up to our staff that makes the things happen. And the same thing's true with kids. If you treat them like adults and present them the information, you have a chance to change. Sending it to the commissioners doesn't always mean that our staff is going to do the same with kids.
Yeah, absolutely. In the schools. And right now, Terry, I can tell you that in Sillette, we are doing a lot more
work. Because they are a charter school, we have a lot more leveraged opportunity to be in the schools. You know, right now, I'm not sure if you're aware, but we have an interim superintendent. We've kind of been in a weird position with leadership at our school district. So we have struggled with how much involvement we've had recently. But in the schools that we're allowed access to, we absolutely share that all of the time. PATA does actual surveys in select schools that are separate to this, that we share results with the kids. And I'll tell you what, we've learned so much information out there, and the statistics that we're seeing with the programs that we're doing out there are unbelievable. And so you're absolutely right. The first line needs to be those kids, and we're absolutely working on getting into the school district.
Good. Good points. Great information. Thank you.
Yeah, we thank you for your questions, too.
Any other questions from any commissioners? All right, again, great information. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for having us.
Keep up the good work. All right, next item on the agenda would be reports from commissioners. Gentlemen?
Well, I was in Salem with you guys on the Monday, and there were some good presentations there, but in case you're not aware, the cap and trade bill is out, because now they're changing the name. They keep moving it. They call it clean fuels, cap and trade. It's a carbon, they have another name for it. I see coming across the day. I can't keep track of the name changes, let alone the bills. But we better take a look, because if we don't get something out of this in the county, we're going to lose. It's the pot of money, it sounds like, is if this goes through, and I have a feeling that it's going to get through in this special session, even though I don't think it's the right thing to do. I think we need more time to work on it, because the rural part of the state hasn't got the information. If you talk to the over there, you saw it, even amongst commissioners, they hadn't really understood what all was in it. And if we don't get on top of this now, we got 3 days here. It's basically introductions of bills and education for the legislature. And in February, they come back for almost the whole month. And things have to move under these rules. So we don't have time to mess around this time. But luckily, the Association of Oregon Counties is on top of it. But we have to be involved as commissioners throughout the whole state, because we need the information to be fed to the whole state and get the information back almost spontaneously.
Well, and Commissioner Thompson, at the AOC meeting on Monday, you indicated that because it's a short session and things move quickly, you need to be involved, and we need to be involved, and we need to be on top of it. So, excellent point. All right, Commissioner Hall. All right,
Can I just one quick thing, just to note that we did have our visioning committee, who is going to be advising the Fair Board and the Board of Commissioners on the Commons redevelopment, a master plan for redevelopment of that property, held their first meeting on Monday night, and received a great deal of information. And during the course of the last 2 days, the consultants who are assisting us in that planning process interviewed over 50 stakeholders. Did some small groups and a little bit of one-on-one to get information to provide back to you some options and ideas about the redevelopment of that property. I think it was a very good meeting on Monday night. I did attend that and participate on your behalf. And just a note, I'd like to make sure that people know, if they can Google Lincoln County Commons, it's probably the easiest way to do it. They'll see a link to an online survey. We're going to do a bunch of public outreach during the course of this particular process, but there's a really short survey that's available on the website there for people who would like to participate, to provide us for more input on what they'd like to see for redevelopment of those grounds.
So I'd like to mention the death of Mary Ann Bosevich. She was this assistant to Bob Callan, assistant to Laverne Weber. She's been involved in everything, that the improvements that's gone on. She's kind of like any great staff person behind the scene, making things happen. If you're involved, you know that person has to take a lot of credit for the accomplishments over there. And she died unexpectedly a few nights ago, I think. Anyway, I'll just mention that it's a great loss to the county.
I had the fortunate opportunity to attend emergency management training in Maryland with Mary Ann early in my tenure as a commissioner in 2012, and she was a great link, so we'll be missed.
Also had a lot of community involvements otherwise as well. A real loss.
All right, anything else from the commissioners? With that, I'm going to put a member of the audience on the spot. I see Heather Desart. Heather is the executive director of the Northwest Oregon Workforce Investment. Heather, would you mind coming forward and just in a very few minutes talk about what's actually happened as far as the creation of the Northwest Workforce Region and where we're at and what we're trying to do. And again, I realize I'm putting you on the spot.
You are.
I will say that I believe you're here because at one time we thought we would be giving approval on the economic development grant recommendations. Those recommendations are public, and the Workforce Investment Board is, I guess, one of the recommendations for a $15,000 award. I expect we'll be making final decision, taking action on that next week. So I apologize because I think I told you today was the day. But
yeah, that's okay. The presentation that I watched with the ladies from the Health Authority was wonderful. So I was pleased to be here to hear that. My children are grown, thank goodness. So a lot of that stuff I don't have to worry about as much. But so thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I'm happy to be here this morning. If I understand your question, or you just want me to give sort of a broad overview of how we came to be?
Well, you can use the time how you feel best.
Okay.
Since I put you on the spot.
Okay. Well, we started out as Oregon Northwest Workforce Investment Board, and through the course of the first year of our existence, we changed our name to Northwest Oregon Works with the acronym NOW. It's a little more active in perception. And we are a board that covers, we're a workforce development board that covers Columbia, Clatsop, Tillamook, Lincoln, and Benton counties. And we, Commissioner Hunt sits on my consortium board and is the chair of that board. And we have a 51-member board of directors who is by law 51%. Employers and businesses, business representatives. We also have a mandate for 20% labor. We have higher education, economic development, Oregon Employment Department. So it's a pretty diverse board, and we do a lot of good work. Right now we're working on a couple of sector strategies, one of which Commissioner Thompson has been very involved with, and that's the maritime. I can give you a brief update on what's going on with that. First of all, Francie Gens had her baby on New Year's Day.
She's been an advisor to that.
Yes, she's been our consultant who's been helping us work our way through that sector. As you know, the bill was passed, and it landed on the governor's desk to appoint a task force. We're working closely. Evan Mitchell and I are working closely with Alana Pertle-Guinney, the governor's office, to make those appointments, and we're advising her. It's really her her job. It's in her purview to do that. And we also have one of our adult service providers, ResCare, who has our adult and dislocated worker contract, helping to put some work experience and on-the-job training activities together for some employers. We feel, and any help I can get from any of you, that we need more representation from the business community in the maritime industry around the table. We've got plenty of public representation, but the actual work and the informing of the work needs to come from industry. So that's going to be the main thrust of our work. I'm working with Christina Payne from Lane County and Jake McClellan from southwestern Oregon. He's on the coast in Coos Bay. So that between the three of us, we cover the entire coast. And we're finding now more the more conversations we have that the maritime industry isn't just a coastal issue. It's, you know, as you know, goes throughout the state.
So I'm surprised that you're having trouble contacting the maritime community. When we had this meetings here, those first meetings, and Doug called them together, we had the room full and people wanted to get in the room.
I think overall there's broad participation. I think we're at a point, and Heather, you can correct me, but I think we're at a point where we really want the private sector to drive what are the needs for the private sector employers, so that when we develop the training programs, we're developing programs that address their needs. And I think, well, we had some representation from the private sector, it would be nice to get a broader representation. But yeah, the room was full.
Yes, there's not a lack of enthusiasm or interest in it. I just think that the initial convening group was mostly public sector. We had the economists from the Oregon Employment Department. We had Jackie Michelonis from the Governor's Regional Solutions Unit. We had higher ed at the table, MERTS and OSU. But we need, you were one of the few, I think, and if I'm getting it wrong, you can help me remember, but I don't remember a lot of industry folks at the table.
The meeting we had here, Pacific Seafoods here, and
yes,
which is a big one that needs to be involved. We had quite a few fishermen involved here at that meeting. Not as many as I'd like, but most of them are. See, that's one of the problems.
It's
been one of the problems with the maritime community all the way along, is these people are at sea. They're not sitting in an office building or sitting someplace where they can go to a normal meeting.
You deal
at a different scale when you deal with the maritime community.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think one of the solutions to that issue is to maybe get some HR, some higher level decision-making HR folks in who, when their boss is at sea, they can be here to represent the needs of their particular company or the industry itself. So that's a work in progress, and we're happily doing that. And
I would just say that your office is in Lincoln City, and again, that's the office that represents the five counties, Columbia, Clatsop, Tillamook, Lincoln, and Benton County. So,
correct.
And I guess one of the objectives is to really co-locate the employment office or regional employment office with you in Lincoln City.
Yeah, we have a brand new WorkSource Center in Lincoln City. Which does have co-location with the Oregon Employment Department, I believe Voc Rehab, Vocational Rehabilitation, and Title I, which is what we are at the board level. So we have six, our local area has six WorkSource centers, two of which are in Lincoln County. So we have one here in Newport and one in Lincoln City. And yes, ideally we want to get as co-located as possible so that folks can go to one place and get as many services as possible without having to go from building to building to building.
I think I can fix your problem.
Yes?
You said the answer. You said, well, how do we communicate with the fishing industry? These guys are at sea. Go to the wives of the fishermen. They're the real bosses behind these operations. I won't kid you.
If you can help me set that up, Commissioner, I'd be happy to.
Organization right here. Go to them. Tell them what your problem is. Fishermen sit down and talk to them.
Is there an organized fishermen's wives?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And they're the ones that run the business side of it. They see all the crew problems. They see all these problems.
That's a great point. I had no idea. So
that's why I'm here.
Well, good. I'll be connecting with you after this. Maybe
you're the one that said the answer. You're the boss.
Okay. We want the decision makers around the table. So if there's a way to do that, I'll happily take that information.
And again, just to clarify, I may misunderstood what you said, but there are 19 members on the Workforce Investment Board. Okay, and 51% of those need to be business representatives.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
The majority.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good job.
Yep,
appreciate you allowing me to put you on the spot.
Sure. Thank you.
Last comment I would make is that there will be a panel that I'll be participating in at the Lincoln City Chamber of Commerce on Friday that will be on the RAIN effort, which is the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network effort to help small businesses thrive, which I think goes hand in hand with what we just heard about the Workforce Investment Board and efforts to create jobs, good jobs, and keep people in the county employed. So if there's nothing else to come before us, we next, our next Actually, we have a special meeting this Friday at 2:30 p.m. right here in this room to hear a report from the Soaring Consulting Firm. And then after that, our next regular meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be on Wednesday the 17th at 9:30 a.m. So again, we'll be in a special session on Friday the 12th at 2:30 p.m. right here in the room. Nothing else? We're adjourned. So